Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with a CBS World News Roundup. Congress is finally in position to act on legislation giving President Carter standby authority to ration gasoline in event of a fuel emergency. Senate and House conferees last night reached agreement on a compromise, and we'll hear about it from Nelson Benton.
Conferees attached conditions to the compromise formula for standby gasoline rationing. If the administration drafted a plan Congress really didn't like, Congress could disapprove it by a two-thirds vote in both houses. After the plan is approved, either house of Congress could block its being imposed if it disagreed with the president's decision to ration. Senator Bennett Johnston, the conference chairman, underscored the emergency nature of the rationing procedures.
Congress cannot block the plan except by a two-thirds vote overriding the president's veto. And that is a very far-reaching, very hard-to-get action of Congress. And the president cannot implement this plan unless there's a real national emergency, unless there's a 20% cutoff in petroleum. And if we ever come to that, then it's going to be very clear in everybody's mind, the president, the Congress, the people, that we've got to have gasoline rationing.
Johnston says he thinks both houses will approve the plan. An administration official says he thinks the White House will buy it as the best it can get. Nelson Benton, CBS News at the Capitol.
The Federal Aviation Administration has ordered all U.S. airlines operating DC-9s to inspect for cracks in the plane's metal skin. The order resulted from an incident day before yesterday when the tail cone of an Air Canada DC-9 was ripped off en route to Nova Scotia from Boston. The plane lost cabin pressure but returned to Boston safely. A difficult question confronts the House today. Should Congress get a pay boost this year? A vote may come this afternoon. Secretary of State Vance is holding a second day of discussions with Egyptian and Israeli officials in Washington on how the Sinai Desert will be supervised following Israeli withdrawal. Bernard Kalb has details.
The talks have been billed as private talks, and at least so far as the opening round of negotiations is concerned, the adjective was accurate. No official indication of whether the U.S., Egypt, and Israel have been able to break through to an acceptable solution on the composition of a peacekeeping force for the Sinai. The differences on this issue are primarily between the U.S. and Israel, and the issue itself emerged as a result of the Russians. They refused earlier this summer to agree to allowing the U.N. emergency force already in the Sinai to continue its monitoring job. So UNIF, as this force was known, was withdrawn, and the U.S. advocated the use of U.N. truce observers. The Israelis resisted, the upshot being that Israel and Egypt on their own agreed to joint patrols in the Sinai, but on a stopgap basis. The challenge now is to agree on something more permanent. And here, the Israelis are insisting that the U.S. live up to what the Israelis see as a commitment to put together an alternate multinational force. The Israelis contending that if there's a deviation here, there could be other deviations along the way, and the whole peace process could stray from the original blueprint signed by the three countries. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
Israel's decision to let its citizens buy land from Arabs in the occupied West Bank region is under mounting fire today in Cairo, and we'll hear about that from Susan Peterson.
Criticism of the recent Israeli cabinet decision is gaining momentum every day in Egypt, and as it does, it is growing sharper. At first, an unnamed spokesman at Egypt's Foreign Office denounced Israel's decision to allow its citizens to buy Arab-owned land in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Then President Sadat told CBS News the decision was a farce and a folly. That same day in Washington, D.C., Egypt's Vice President Hosni Mubarak said Egypt rejected the decision. Now Prime Minister Mustafa Khalil joined the criticism by calling the decision a straightforward violation of the Camp David Accords and a fresh attempt, Khalil said, to eradicate the Arab character of the Palestinian lands. All three Cairo newspapers also had sharp words to say about Israel's latest move, so resentment is widening here as well as elsewhere. Last night, Austrian Chancellor Bruno Kreisky came down sharply on the side of Egypt when he described the measures as being provocative and having no justification at all. It's thought here that these public denouncements will influence the reaction and win the support of the U.S. State Department and the United Nations. Susan Peterson, CBS News, Cairo.
Yesterday, the State Department said the Israeli action seems contrary to the spirit and intent of the peace process. The UN General Assembly is now holding its annual session in New York. But yesterday, even before the assembly organized its work for the next 3 months, it ran into the problem of Cambodia. And Richard C. Hotlett reports that that issue, together with its implications, may well turn into one of the biggest headaches of the session.
Cambodia came up at the end of yesterday's meeting after the election of Tanzania's Salim Ahmed Salim as Assembly President and the admission of St. Lucia as the 152nd member state of the UN. On a point of order, then, Vietnam demanded that the representatives of the pro-Chinese Pol Pot regime, known here as Democratic Kampuchea, be removed from the hall. He said they were here illegally. The matter has been referred to the Credentials Committee, but the fight will be a big one. It is one aspect of the Soviet-Chinese struggle for influence in Southeast Asia. At the Havana summit of the Non-Aligned, Fidel Castro, who wants the Non-Aligned movement to walk at least close to the Soviet line, simply kept the Pol Pot people out of the hall. Here at the UN, they count as the legal representatives of Cambodia. And the argument, unsuccessfully pressed by Southeast Asian countries in Havana, will be re-emphasized here. It is this. A foreign army cannot invade a neighboring state, throw out its government, and claim legitimacy for the successors it installs without rewarding aggression and overturning the rule of law in international affairs. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
The Credentials Committee is expected to give the Assembly its recommendations on the Cambodian issue by Friday. The results are in from Dade County, Florida, and as we hear from Martha Teichner, the proposal for a massive reduction in property taxes has been resoundingly defeated.
By almost a 2-to-1 margin, Dade County voters turned down a proposal that would have cut their property taxes 99.9%, a proposal that would have eliminated more than $170 million from the budget for the major provider of services for 27 municipalities, including Miami and Miami Beach. The vote was approximately 65% against the proposal, 35% for it, an overwhelming margin. But Marshall Harris, head of Save Our Services, one of the major committees that fought the cut, thinks Dade County commissioners may have learned a lesson.
I think there is no doubt that anybody who went through this campaign as the commissioners did would have to say, maybe we better take a look at where we're spending our money and are we doing it as effectively as possible. But the reason the vote was so outstanding in support of our position against the referendum was because those services that Metro has been rendering were finally understood.
The issue actually got on the ballot by mistake. Supporters circulated a petition to put it there that they thought would cut taxes roughly in half, but it was worded wrong. Martha Teichner, CBS News, Miami.
In Denver, the Episcopal Church's House of Delegates has approved a resolution that, in effect, bars the ordination of practicing homosexuals. The resolution was endorsed Monday by the House of Bishops. It also applies to persons who engage in heterosexual relations outside marriage. Two of the eight companies involved in the Duluth Superior Grain Handlers walkout have now reached tentative agreement on a new contract. And Rich Holder of CBS radio affiliate WCCO reports that talks are still in progress with the others.
Negotiations are continuing in the Duluth Superior Grain Handlers strike, but one port official in Duluth says if the walkout isn't settled within the next 2 weeks, it could mean the loss of the entire 79 shipping season in the nation's third largest agricultural port. Bill Cortez of the Duluth Port Authority says that would only compound the already heavy losses from the strike.
To this point, we estimate that the Port of Duluth Superior has lost to its local economy about $40 million. Now, that's strictly local. That's lost in terms of wages paid to grain millers, the longshoremen, the tugboat operators, and all the various and sundry maritime-related businesses within the Port of Duluth Superior.
Cortez says the $40 million figure does not include losses to Midwest farmers, farm-related industries, elevators, truckers, railroads, and shippers. A cost-of-living clause continues to be the major roadblock to a settlement in the grain handlers' strike, now midway in its 11th week. Rich Holter for CBS News, Minneapolis.
The price of gold rose again today in London. It was fixed at $376 an ounce, but yesterday's frenzy seems to have died down. The median price in Zurich is $373. Gold opened in Hong Kong at $392.50 an ounce, but it quickly fell back below $380.